Welcome to the Groups Matter podcast, episode 37. Thanks for being with us, Chris Surratt, my co-host as always. I'm Brian Daniel. Chris, welcome to lovely episode 37.
It is great to be here. I'm always excited to be in the podcast studio.
It's a good day. It's always a good day.
It is.
We should go to a daily show. You ever thought about that? We could do a daily.
You know, if both of us could get in the same room every day, that would be a miracle.
A miracle. Yeah. Well, I think it's easier for me than you. Even though my meeting schedule tends to be, shall I say, robust.
I walk by your office a few times a day, and I've never seen you without somebody.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, we aim to please there at Sutherland Tower 537 or whatever that office number is.
Yep.
Well, we got a good show. Will Johnston's going to be with us. And I know you're going to introduce Will later. And we are, you know, we're coming down to the... you know, the final days of 2016.
I know. It has flown, like they always say, but it has flown. It has flown.
Has it been a good year for you?
It's been a great year. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I have a full year under my belt at Lifeway, and I've loved it. And just getting the chance to talk to group pastors and churches all across the country, even the world. I've been to South America a few times. So, yeah, it's been a blast.
All right, so in my world, in the in the publishing world, we have two big seasons, and a third one's in the spring. But obviously, the fall is really big for us. A lot of groups, you know, church calendar begins in the fall. We see a lot of groups begin in the fall, but also January, which we're coming up on first of the year. So I wanted to ask you, just top of mind here, kind of putting you on the spot, but can you give us two or three things to keep in mind? In terms of launching groups for the new year.
Yeah. And this is, to me, this is really the best time of the year to launch groups, because people are coming back to church. They've made New Year's resolutions. They're going to try church again. They may try community again. Maybe they've been in small groups and that didn't work, but they feel like they want to give it a shot. So I would encourage every church, every pastor that's listening out there, that if you're not planning to launch groups, really think about it, because this is when people will jump in when they wouldn't jump in any other time of the year. And a few things just to think about now is, you know, we want to get some momentum behind this. So you want to start recruiting some leaders and getting them ready to launch those groups. So you want to have those leaders in place, and you want to think about, what are those groups going to study? You know, you don't want to just launch groups and kind of hope that they find something to study or that discipleship happens. You want to help them with that. So you want to pick a curriculum that's easy to follow. There's some great things for the new year. I know that at our church, my church, we did Let Hope In by Pete Wilson, which is a great thing for the new year. But just pick a really easy study that groups can jump into and get excited about the year. Another great option is Disciples Path the Journey. We have hundreds of churches that are starting this January are going to follow the discipleship path for a year. And so, you know, check that out and see if that might work for you. But just have a curriculum plan in mind that you can hand your leaders, and you can take off in January. And then the third thing I would say is think about after that launch. You know, maybe you have something set up for them, but, you know, what do you have in March? Do you have another curriculum ready for them so they can keep that momentum? You know, what are you going to do going into Easter? So, you know, plan now, but also think about the future for your groups when it comes to, like, springtime.
All right, let's talk about Bible study options just real quick. You mentioned Disciples Path, the Journey. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Let Hope In. Of course, there are lots of options there. In terms of the approach and how one might go about choosing what Bible study to undertake as a first study, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not just going, this decision does not need to be taken too casually. Mm-hmm. I know when I'm around a lot of group leaders, particularly at the, you know, at the more strategic level, it seems to me that the conversation tends to go more towards organization and instruction, strategy, structure, and not as quite as much time, and I would think not nearly enough time goes into, so what are your groups going to do during their time when they are together? So when you are in these conversations and you're advising or coaching, how do you go about helping group leaders or coaches or small group pastors navigate that part of group life?
Well, when it comes, I always say that you need to know what are the expectations for your group. And so you need to establish the kind of the most important things that you expect to come out of a group. So for us, it was number one, they need to be in community. So are they doing life together? Number two is, are they studying something? And I think that is essential. I really do. You know, we want them to develop as a disciple. And the best way to do that is to get into God's word and study something together. And that's where curriculum comes to play. And you need to pay attention to, is it something, especially for a new group, is it something that leads to a conversation? Is it well written? You know, do the questions kind of get people to think about where they are in their life and then apply the Bible to their life? And so paying a lot of attention to the curriculum, one, having curriculum, but then paying attention to what type of curriculum. And that's one of the reasons why I love like Bible Studies for Life, because it's topical, but you can apply it to your life. It digs into the scripture. So something like that, or Disciples Path, the journey, which is very similar to that, but it doesn't take a lot for somebody to start a conversation. They don't have to do a lot of study on the front end. They don't have to do a lot of reading, which will, you know, help a lot of people lead a group that wouldn't normally lead a group. They can just basically glance at it before the group meeting, see where they're going, and then lead a conversation in their group. And then the third part is, just, are they doing something to shape the culture? You know, are they out on mission? Are they serving the community? But just find out what are those expectations that you want to see from your groups, and then follow up on it and help them, you know, provide curriculum. Do something like a smallgroup.com or Bible Studies for Life, but provide that piece for them. And it'll be that much easier.
All right. I would add to that. One of the things, a couple things here. I really like the starting points approach to groups. And the starting points being either life application, theology, or text. I think those are good starting points. Now, one of the things that we have established, and I would say, and tell me what you think about this, in coaching group leaders or new groups, is to take into account this idea of a balanced discipleship model. Mm-hmm. And that is that you look at foundational discipleship, Bible, book, or character, doctrine, life issues, what we may call life application, mm-hmm. notions of identity, mission, and community. So that's seven categories. And so categorically, you approach the discipleship of your group in these areas that when you look, and so we have this model at lifeway.com. So again, foundational discipleship, Bible study, foundational discipleship is one, books of the Bible two, doctrine, real life issues, identity, mission, and community. And that's what we have concluded are the elements of a balanced discipleship. Mm-hmm. What better time to be intentional about discipleship in your group than at launch?
Exactly. We always provided our group leaders a curriculum map. And that's what you're talking about, is giving them
not
something.
A menu.
Not yeah, a menu, yeah. But actually we called it a menu. It's kind of funny because we designed it after a menu at a restaurant. But it was a map. It walked them through different categories. It walked them through almost exactly what those categories are before they were what we said they are. So I think it's really good to think in those sections. So we want them, I think a great place to start is that kind of foundation, that foundational discipleship. So start there and do a 6-week study that really kind of builds that foundation, and then move to that Bible book or character, and then to doctrine and real life issues. But, you know, don't just stay in one of those quadrants, because then they're not growing outside of that. So if they're always studying something that's about community, you know, they're not going to be balanced. The group's not going to be balanced. So I think curriculum is a great place to kind of give some guardrails when it comes to the discipleship balance.
Yeah, it's not a decision to be taken lightly.
Nope.
Thanks for that, Chris. So, all right, we've got Will Johnston. You ready to get Will on the phone?
Here we go. Today's guest is Will Johnston, and I'm so excited Will is going to be here with us in just a second. Will, I've known Will for a long time, got to know him when he was in D.C. I think originally Will's from Chicago, but He went to D.C. for a while and was on Capitol Hill, and then joined the staff at National Community Church. The pastor is Mark Batterson, and Heather Zimple is a pastor there as well. I think she's been a guest on the podcast.
She has.
Yep. Heather's amazing. And so he was there, and he oversaw 150-plus small groups, managing everything from leader recruitment and training to marketing and promotion. And then he moved recently to the West Coast and is now the director of Build Community at Eastside Christian Church, and that's Gene Apple, in Anaheim, California. So Will's amazing. He's an analytical thinker. He loves systems, and I'm kind of like that. So, you know, we kind of resonate in that way.
Do you have any idea, in his bio, there's a reference to Leaky House? Do you have any? That's probably something we need to ask Will.
We'll have to ask him. I'm dying to know. Yeah, I don't know that. Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out what the Leaky House is.
Okay, that's going to be question number one.
Yeah. So let's get Will on the phone here. So, all right, how you doing, Will?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Man, we are good. We are good. You are in Southern California. I just want to say, is there any difference between the weather in D.C. and the weather in California about now? Or, well, I mean, the winter months. Is there any difference?
Is that a bad question? That's a bad question.
Is that a bad question?
only about 35 degrees and 2 feet of snow. But other than that, it's pretty much exactly the same.
Pretty much the same? That. Yeah, I see that. Yeah, last time... I was actually just with you out in Anaheim a few weeks ago, and we were talking about it rained. What's it like when it rains in Southern California?
Well, this might be the biggest difference between Southern California and anywhere else I've lived. When it rains here, people lose their minds, and they're not quite sure what to do with it. So the number of accidents the morning it rained, it like quadrupled from the week before on the same Monday morning. Like it was a little bit crazy.
They just don't know what to do with that wet stuff. It doesn't make any sense.
It's illogical.
No, we don't have it very often. So
right.
So Will, we were looking at your bio. So you're at National Community, right? 150 small groups where you managed everything from leader recruitment, training, and marketing promotion. And now you're the director of Build Community at Eastside, now in Anaheim, like we've already mentioned. And then there's a reference to Leaky House. There's got to be a story there.
Charlie the cat,
and the Leaky House.
yeah. So my wife and I bought our first house when we were in D.C., and the housing market there is pretty expensive. And so we bought a house in a neighborhood that was, you know, well, it was questionable. We moved in. It was pretty nice by the time we moved out. But we had bought a recently renovated house, and it started leaking. The roof leaked, the skylight leaked, the plumbing leaked. There were just lots of leaks all over the house. We were constantly getting something fixed that had to do with water somewhere, which is not ideal in a house.
I would imagine it's not ideal, especially in the Northeast when there's a lot of water.
And the way you solve it is easy. You move to California.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Now, were you able to buy any more of a house in California? Because it's not cheap there either.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Housing prices are about the same, but you tend to get about 50% more than what you had. So we have a little bit bigger house here that's about the same price as our house in D.C., and it has an actual yard as opposed to just a back driveway with a deck over it. So that was kind of an exciting development for us.
Hey, when were you at Wheaton, just out of curiosity?
I graduated there in 2005, so they're 2001 to 2005.
All right, well, Will, my name is Brian Daniel. You and I haven't met. Great to have you on the show. So thank you.
I'm excited to be here with you guys.
Thanks for making time today. So your current title is Director of Build Community. And like we've already said, you're at Eastside Christian Church in Anaheim, California, where there is no such thing as weather, I am told. Just doesn't exist. Always the same. So I wanted to ask you just real quick as we get into this, what does it mean to be the Director of Build Community?
Right. That's kind of a confusing title. So our vision as a church is to pursue God, build community, and unleash compassion. And, you know, we talk about how we do that in our weekend services through small groups and volunteering and by serving in the community. And so really it's that second piece, small groups and volunteering. And so it's kind of what you would think of at a lot of churches as kind of the adult ministries. So assimilation, volunteers, small groups, baptisms, kind of any of that discipleship focused stuff.
Now, when you moved there, we talked about this, your plan was not necessarily to go on staff at a church. I mean, you had been at National Community, and you actually moved out there for your wife's job, right? Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I was planning to take some time and do some writing and some consulting on groups and ministry and things like that. And God had other plans. I was trying to lay low. And the second week I attended Eastside, met one of the elders who was like, "Oh, well, we're looking for some help with our small groups," and off to the races we went. So,
so your first mistake was mentioning that you had done small groups in the past.
I tried to avoid it, but I felt like I shouldn't lie about it either. So it was, when she kept digging, I gave in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, God has a way of doing that. He'll get us back to where we need to be, I guess. But
that he does.
One of the things that I want to talk to you about is, it's kind of interesting because you moved from an urban-based ministry in D.C. I mean, I've been to National Community Church. It is literally, I mean, how far is it from like Capitol Hill?
A little over a mile from the Capitol building.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is urban as urban gets. So you were right there in the mix of it to a suburban-based church in California. If you've never been to Anaheim, just think suburbs and Disneyland. Okay. So that's kind of what you did. What are the major differences in approach to ministry when it comes to an urban context and a suburban context?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think the differences are almost innumerable. I mean, I think about, you know, our, when you're talking about kind of a, your weekend services, our venue sizes are just incredibly different. You know, the largest venue we had in DC, it's at about 1200 people. You know, if that, and, out here, I mean, you've got venues, hey, we can stick 1800 in here. We can stick, you know, 4,000 people in here. There's just a little bit more space. Again, land is not exactly cheap in Southern California, but when you compare it to the heart of a city, it seems a lot more reasonable. When I was in DC, we ended up kind of launching a lot of small locations, often in movie theaters that, you know, you'd have 200 or 300 people. And then as things would grow, you would start another one. You know, going from an urban environment, it was just a lot more folks who were young professionals, kind of getting started in their career, maybe mid career at the latest. And so, not nearly as many folks with kids. And so that's just a big difference. You know, I mean, I think we had maybe 75 people in our youth ministry by the time I left DC. And I mean, we've got, you know, the East Side is about double the size of National Community Church, but our youth ministry is probably six times the size or something like that. It's a lot more transient in the city. You look at just, you know, people are coming in from all over the place. They're often moving there for work, and DC specifically, just because, you know, that's where Congress is, that's where the White House is. There's folks coming from all over the country. And so people come in and out, and so they're there for, you know, 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, and then they leave. And in Anaheim here, I mean, most folks that I meet grew up kind of somewhere around here, and so it just kind of makes a difference in the way that you're ministering to them, the sort of felt needs that exist. A lot more income diversity at Eastside. You know, when I was at National Community Church and in DC in general, there's not a huge kind of middle class. You have a lot of folks that are really struggling and kind of living at or near the poverty line. And it kind of spans the gamut. I mean, you've got that. You've got kind of a middle class, and what you had in DC, you know, you had a lot of people who were upwardly mobile. You know, they've got, even if they're not making much yet, it's really because they're younger and they're not that far in their career, but they've got a master's degree and they're kind of on the fast track. And here it really does span the gamut, from one end of the economic spectrum to the other. Lots of differences, a lot more families out here. I mentioned kids, but then even just, you know, that resulting in kind of some stay-at-home moms that certainly were not as common in DC. And so just the way that, you know, kind of the way that you're trying to reach out to people and the sort of needs that they have are quite a bit different.
So, Will, we had Mark Howell on a recent episode, and we asked him about community in Las Vegas. And I told him about, I shared an example of a local pastor here in Nashville that I had have a relationship with, and he talked about groups ministry in this area, which is more or less, it's I would actually put it more Midwestern, but it feels, you know, and skews more Southern and has some of those attributes. But he had been here in Chicago and some of the Northwest and talked about groups ministry in the South, which is so different from other places. And I think it's how we understand community and relationships, and it to some degree is the difference between suburban and other other kind of I guess communities. So I want to ask you, because you're unique in that you've got this East West Coast and at the extreme level, right? So I mean, you're not just kind of East and kind of West. You're Washington D.C. and you're Southern California. So in terms of community, how does that feel and look different for people on the West Coast to people from the East Coast? And if you've got any insights as to other regions and how this might work, I'd also be interested in what you think you've gleaned from any of those experiences.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to distinguish completely for me what the differences are between, or you know, why things are different, whether it's East versus West Coast, or urban versus suburban. But one of the big differences I've just found is because it's not as transient here, I don't think there's quite the felt need that there was for community when I was in D.C. You know, here people, they grew up here, their families are often still around. They, you know, they have lifelong friends. I've got a couple people on my team. One of them went out for her 50th birthday yesterday. And one of the other guys on my team has known her since she was 11. And so you have a lot more of that. And a lot less, hey, I've been here for 6 weeks or 6 months or whatever, and I'm craving friendships and I'm craving community. And so figuring out what that looks like is definitely a little bit different. I think there's also just it's kind of a stereotype, but it is a little bit more of a relaxed culture here. And whereas in D.C., you know, it was full of people who were driven and really, you know, they were very career oriented. And as such, I think they often saw themselves as leaders a little bit more naturally. So when you're looking at, you know, small groups and community, you're looking for people to lead. That is, I think it's a little bit more of a stretch for folks here, and helping them to understand what that looks like and how that might actually be something they could do versus people who are probably more eager to lead than maybe even they're ready to do.
I have a follow up on that, Will. You talked about the transient nature. And do you remember, I remember talking to you guys several years ago, National Community, what was the percentage of people or number of people that you would lose like every year, every 2 years?
Yeah. If I remember the stat correctly, basically when we would survey our congregation once a year, 40% of the people would say that they had been in DC for a year or less. And so it was just a lot of turnover all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I remember talking to Heather several years ago about the fact that you had to develop leaders fast and be ready for them to move on. So do you feel like now that you can kind of invest more in your leaders and maybe develop them, like, you know, up the pipeline a little bit more because you're going to have them longer in, you know, in California than you would in DC? Is any of that come into play?
It hasn't really. What's interesting is because there was more of a leadership culture in DC, I think you could kind of start a little bit further down the road. And it was just a little bit easier to get those folks recruited in here. You know, I've got roughly the same number of groups here right now than I had when I was at NCC. And like I said, we're about twice the size. And so there's just a huge catch up that I'm playing at the moment, trying to get those folks recruited and get them trained quickly, and kind of get them started. So for right now, it's pretty much the same, and that may shift over the next couple of years as we kind of grow that a little bit more and can start thinking a little bit longer term what that looks like.
Hey, Will, I'm I'm curious, just one more question as a follow-up here, just based on the conclusions and, you know, as you have assessed this East versus West paradigm in regards to transient and laid-back culture and more established and maybe more career-oriented or driven, how did you, I mean, and some of this may be in hindsight even, but how did you adjust your approach to group ministry based on, you know, these revealed realities or these conclusions that you came to? Or did you? I mean, did you approach it the same way, and these are just things that you took into account?
Yeah, I think, honestly, the approach has been more or less the same so far. Kind of with the baseline we're starting with, it's just been, you know, hit the ground running and kind of gather the low hanging fruit. One interesting difference, right? That so it's the perennial small group pastor question/nightmare. What do I do about childcare? And again, that being something that's a lot more relevant here in some ways. I've also found that that folks are a lot more willing and able to kind of figure that out because maybe they have family and friends and stuff around a little bit more when trying to figure out what to do with their kids during a small group. There's a lot more folks who are just kind of be like, well, I can make that work and go ahead and go to the group. And not that it's not still an issue. But that might, that is kind of one example of, okay, the tactics didn't really change, even though the environment changed, because that environment also kind of worked itself out in those differences.
Well, Will, thanks for joining us, man. I know it's hard to come out of the outside in Southern California and actually go inside and talk on a phone. So I appreciate you doing that and the wisdom that you gave us. I think it's really intriguing to find out kind of the different needs of people and then to hear that really it's the same. I mean, it comes down to they're people. We all have busy lives. We all have jobs. And, we have to find a way to get those people in community, no matter how busy they are. So that was good to hear from you. But thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Will, great to meet you. And I look forward to having you on the show again. Thanks for being on Preach Matters. All right. That was really good. Thanks for making that happen, Chris.
Yeah, I love Will. I mean, he's such a great guy and has been a part of two amazing ministries, really, when you look at National Community Church and Eastside Christian Church in California. I mean, that's just both of those churches are just doing incredible things.
And one of the things that, and I've asked that question, I'm not sure that I did the best job of setting him up to answer the question, but this idea of how groups ministries may be approached differently in the different regions. But really, it's not regional. It's more communal. It's more local, I think. Because even within Nashville, you have, well, Nashville and greater Nashville, you have a lot of those same things that he described. So the East versus West, Midwest versus South, I don't know that that's even relevant.
No, I think you're right. I actually had that thought because the church that I was a part of in Nashville is based right in downtown. And what he was talking about with kind of the inner, Washington, D.C. is exactly what we saw with that church. But then we had Eddie Mosley on, another podcast, and he's out kind of a little bit from Nashville in Smyrna, and it's very suburban. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just where you are in your city. It's going to make a difference on your ministry approach and how you offer groups and all of that.
I will say this, at a place like, let's say, New York City, Baltimore area, we had a staff member from Baltimore. He was very involved in groups up there, and like a Southern California, Chicago, or maybe even downtown Philadelphia. When I've been there, it seems like people in within those contexts, see if I can say this right, understand proximity and community better than people that have spent their whole life in suburban USA.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, and I just look at just myself. So we live in a cul-de-sac. There are like four houses on the cul-de-sac, and I know who lives in those houses, right? But most of us go into our front doors and live our lives behind that front door. Whereas it seems like in downtown Chicago and those more urban areas, they spend so much more time together just in the rhythms of life.
It's very true, and we've experienced that in our life. We started out in Nashville the first 3 years. We lived in an area called Bellevue, which is very suburbs, and we knew some of our neighbors, but our garage actually was behind our house. So we would pull in our driveway and go into the house from behind and really just never see our neighbors. We would wave at them and that was it. We moved a few years ago to downtown Nashville. So we live downtown in a condo and we do life with our neighbors. We see them every time I walk out my door, they are there. And we do life, and we never did that in the suburbs, and it's just natural, normal. So we have experienced that.
So I think taking into account what Will has shared with us, and I think that was, it was really good, and he's very articulate just about that juxtaposition, how he approached it. I think I would agree with you, Chris. I don't know how anyone could really disagree. It's still groups ministry. Your approach is the same. But I think listening to Will, what's important is that you just keep in mind where you are. And as you are engaging people, to be mindful of this culture and the values of this culture. Like particularly California, it's more established. They grew up together in this one situation anyway, and how that may be different from in Washington or in D.C., where you had people in and out on a 24-month basis. It seems. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do design your system differently, but I think the content and your goal is always the same, which is discipleship. But the method that you get there probably needs to adjust to your context.
That's Will Johnston, and he is director of Build Community at Eastside Christian Church in Anaheim, California. And I don't see that Will has a blog that we can direct you to, but I would encourage you to look him up on Twitter and follow Will. So appreciate him giving time today. So, Chris, that's going to wrap it up for episode 37.
Wow, 37.
Oh. So I'd like to thank producer Drew Porterfield. Appreciate everyone out there, and look forward to being with you for episode 38. Thanks, Chris.